This is Mike Consul. Welcome to Novelist Spotlight. I want to talk to you about Ken Kesey, the great Ken Kesey, former Merry Prankster, which I'll get into in a little bit. But he's best known, of course, if you do know him, which I hope you do, as the author of the novel One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which was turned into a stage play, which was turned into a Hollywood movie and won 5 Academy Awards. It was starring Jack Nicholson. And in the movie, what happened was that Ken Kesey created this great character named Nurse Ratched. She was actually a horrible woman, a nurse who was more interested in controlling the patients than she was in really attending to their mental health needs. And some background on Ken Kesey. He was born in Colorado, graduated from University of Oregon. He died several years ago in the Willamette Valley of Oregon. He was only 66 years old. That's pretty young by today's standards. But he lived a very full life. Not only did he write One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which was his first novel, but then his second novel called Sometimes a Great Notion is considered by a lot of critics as his best novel, better than One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. In fact, Ken Kesey himself said that Sometimes a Great Notion was his magnum opus. Now, there's a couple points I want to make about Ken Kesey relevant to writing, one of which has to do with what is fiction really? Let's go back in time to when Ken Kesey was actually taking part in a federal government experiment with LSD, and it was mescaline or psilocybin, I forget which, but LSD was one. The U.S. government was trying to understand, and this is back in the 1950s, they were trying to understand the effect psychedelics were having on the human brain. Ken Kesey needed the money, so he agreed to take part in this along with other people and was paid money. It really opened his mind up. He became an advocate of the use of psychedelics for expanding consciousness. And he would go to a mental health facility that he worked at in Menlo Park, California, working with mental health patients, of course, while he was tripping. I don't think he was supposed to be doing that, you know, off of experimentation hours, but he was. This is my recollection of it. And he would look in the faces of these mentally ill people, and without the filters that, I mean, LSD or psilocybin, mescaline tend to strip the filters away, and we start to experience reality in a fuller way. And I'm not advocating LSD or psilocybin, any kind of hallucinogenic. I'm just telling the story here. He saw in these faces the torment. He saw the physical manifestations of the torment in their faces. It was an enlightening experience for him. And he saw the suffering. He saw the suffering, the face of suffering, you might say. He ended up, based on that experience, writing One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. A fictional account, however, it's based on his experiences, and that's the first point I wanted to make, that so often there are people who say, well, I only read nonfiction because, you know, fiction is made up. Yeah, it is and it isn't. There's just so much fiction out there that is based on, I mean, a fiction writer isn't making these things out of just thin air. There's an awful lot of personal experience. There's a lot of witnessing that has gone on. A second example I'll just throw out there is about the Sackler family at Purdue Pharma. And the whole opioid crisis, the horrible things that they did in trying to take this Johnny Appleseed approach to painkillers, saying OxyContin wasn't addictive, and what ended up happening, more than 58,000 people dead. I'm sure it was a lot more than that, but that puts it at more than the Vietnam War died over the course of, I don't know how many years it was, fewer years than the Vietnam War died from these opioids. Well, a Wall Street Journal reporter writes, I think it's called Empire of Pain, nonfiction book about the Sackler family. It's all facts. It's all just factual. Boom, boom, boom. But then on Hulu, if you have Hulu and you're watching Dope Sick, it is a what people would call a fictional account of what happened with the opioid crisis in the Sackler family, based on real events. It says based on real events for mature audiences only. Well, here's the thing. That's the same thing with One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. That's the same thing with so many novels that are written, so much fiction that's out there, so many movies that are out there that are supposedly pieces of fiction, but they're actually made to point to some kind of malady in society or some kind of injustice in society. There's nothing really fictional about that other than they've assigned characters to play roles that they know have been played by real people out there in the real world. This is what happened with One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Okay, based on his experiences, he writes One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, huge hit and great movie. If you haven't seen it, it's one of the movies that was named by Time Magazine as one of the greatest or most influential movies over the course of something like a 50-year span. I forget exactly what it was. But the point being that it was a landmark movie and so influential that now there is a show on HBO Max or Prime, one of the premium channels, one of the premium TV channels, called Nurse Ratched. She's from the story. She's from the novel, from the movie. And it's all about her and her wickedness. The other thing to know about Ken Kesey, I mentioned earlier he was a Merry Prankster. The Merry Pranksters, if you're not familiar, they were a group of semi-famous people, Timothy Leary among them, I believe. I don't have all my notes in front of me. I'm actually driving in a car right now on my way to Sacramento Airport. So I don't have this all in front of me. So I apologize for that. All of this stuff can be looked up. But the point is that he was a Merry Prankster on a bus with a bunch of other guys. I believe Timothy Leary was one of them. And they drove up around the country in the psychedelic school bus that they had, you know, they painted it psychedelic, drove around the country and basically spread the good word about not Jesus, but about LSD and other psychedelics and how it could expand your mind, make you see reality more clearly, see things for what they really are, and so on. Again, I'm not proselytizing. I'm not promoting this. I'm just saying this is a fact of life. It happened. In fact, if you really wanted to learn about the Merry Pranksters, Tom Wolfe wrote a nonfiction book called The Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test, where he rode along with the Merry Pranksters for, I think, months, taking scrupulous notes, making recordings and so on, and then writing the book that really puts you on the bus. And it's a wild story. And Tom Wolfe writes with his usual tremendous flamboyance and color, which is suitable considering that these are a bunch of guys tripping on acid, and the title of the book's The Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test. Not the easiest read in my estimation. I read it, but it was not easy to read. And I'm a big Tom Wolfe fan, but that's not one of his more readable books. But I don't want to discourage you from that. It was a best-selling book, and a lot of people just loved it. It may have just been me. At any rate, not only was he a merry prankster, but he also later in life became a... He spent time in jail, by the way. He got busted for marijuana. He spent some time in jail. I think it was just 5 months. But he ended up becoming a literature... I'm not sure his exact title is literature or creative writing professor at the University of Oregon, his alma mater, from which he graduated. And he taught creative writing, and he did set about, this was written about in Rolling Stone magazine, and he set about deciding that we as a class to his students, and these were serious students, these were more advanced students who were dedicated to writing. They wanted to be writers. And here's the great Ken Kesey, he's going to be your instructor. He says, we're going to write a novel by the end of the semester. We're all going to take a different chapter, we're all going to work on a chapter at a time. The details, the fine details escape me, but I've got the story, and the story is that he told them, we're going to write this novel. Well, they got off to a slow start, and he ended up telling them that, look, we're never going to get this novel done that we're writing together. By the end of the semester at this pace, we're going to have to speed things up. So he said, what we're going to do is we're going to, in this period, in this hour class today, or maybe it was an hour 15-minute class, whatever it was, you know, an hour class in college is only 50 minutes. So he said, we're going to write the chapter. Everybody's going to write the chapter, and we're going to do it in the time we have in this class. And, you know, people were groaning over it. And one guy said that this is ridiculous. That's not how you write. You can't do it. It's impossible. You can't write a chapter that way. And Ken Kesey just shrugged his shoulders, looked at his watch and said, go. And what ended up happening is people wrote, they pen to paper or fingers to keyboard. They started writing like the Dickens, trying to fulfill the assignment they were given by their instructor, Ken Kesey. So long story short, what they ended up doing is they finished that novel by the end of the semester. And I believe that Ken Kesey got it published. Again, I apologize for not having all these facts, but I am in a vehicle right now without them at my fingertips. And, you know, this was quite an experiment. I'd never read the novel. I'm not sure if it's any good. Maybe it was one of those experimental sort of assignment. But my point is not that they finished the novel. It's that the students themselves, including the kid who protested and said, this is ridiculous. This is not how you write. You can't write that fast. Admitted that the whole experiment, the whole exercise of doing that really opened him up to the realization that to write that way, to allow yourself to really force yourself to write quickly, freed him up. It allowed him to just say things on paper quickly and without using a lot of those internal sensors that tell us no, that tell us things like, no, this sentence isn't good. I need to stop and rewrite it. You just plow ahead. It's kind of stream of consciousness, but it's what I call channeled stream of consciousness. But the fact that they had to write quickly really gave them a kind of freedom they didn't know previously when they were just bleeding those words onto paper, drip, drip, drip. And that's what can make writing so frustrating when we take that dribs and drabs approach to drips and drabs, I guess is the proper phrase, to writing. So channel stream of consciousness, and what I mean by channel stream of consciousness is, if you say stream of consciousness and people think, well, you write about whatever comes to your mind, and yeah, that's true. And it's going to be all this fragmented stuff. You're going to be maybe writing about, I need to do the laundry today. And then you're writing about my trip tomorrow from Sacramento Airport and so on and so forth. Channeled stream of consciousness is where you don't stop writing, but you are writing on a specific subject. You know that you're writing a chapter, let's say. You know what the chapter, what you want that chapter to say. And you don't stop writing, but you keep all the writing riveted to that subject matter. I've done it, and it works. And you will still drift at times. You'll get a little bit far afield, but then you just bring yourself back to the channel. And by a channel, I mean, you know, a channel is think of it as a channel of water. It has banks. You stay within those banks, and it moves along. And the narrower the focus, the narrower the river, the faster the water will flow. If you're talking about the same volume of water and then you narrow it, then it will flow faster. That's kind of metaphorical, but take that lesson from Ken Kesey's class when he had people writing at full gallop. And they learned something about it. They learned that it's not the way you're going to want to write all the time, but it's another tool in the toolbox that's what's important, is to make sure that we have a lot of different tools that we can use so that we can achieve what we're trying to achieve. We're not always going to write that way. We're not always going to use channeled stream of consciousness. We're not always going to write fast. But another tool. So remember, I'm really speaking more to the readers and the writers. So the writers know this about my first point, which was that so much of fiction is actually nonfiction, just cast as fiction. And obviously, yes, characters are constructed, scenes are constructed, and so on. But the integrity of the information is there. It's nonfiction for all intents and purposes. And that's by no means all novelists or most novelists necessarily. When you're reading a genre writer, say somebody like, I'm just trying to think of her name, is Jana Ivanovich, who writes detective novels. I don't think she's writing nonfiction, although there's not lots of nonfictional stuff in there. I'm sure she researches, you know, how police do their work, how investigators do their work, how forensics are done, and so on. But I don't think of her work that way, of course, but or most genre writers, or maybe any genre writers for that matter. But hopefully the point is taken. And then secondly, writing with speed, with velocity, can help us produce a lot of copy, and also produce the kind of copy at times that otherwise would not come out of us. So we produce a lot of junk that we need to throw away, but we also produce, you know, you sift through that and you find those gems that you're going to hold on to. So let's say you write 2,000 or 3,000 words. If you come away with 50 great words or 100 great words, that's a beautiful thing right there. And that's a nice chunk of copy. And it's done in a short amount of time. So there you have it. If you don't know Ken Kesey, check him out. He's a figure. He's a counterculture figure. That's a word I have not used yet. But that's the thing about Ken Kesey. He is a counterculture figure. His writing is considered, or his history as a writer and as an actor. I don't mean as an actor on stage. I mean as an actor in life, being one of the Merry Pranksters and much of the stuff that he said and did in life was counterculture in nature. And he's a big figure from the time period. You might want to learn about the Merry Pranksters too, because he was one of them. And that was one interesting trip, both literally and figuratively, that they made, with Tom Wolfe documenting it in his book, The Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test. So that's it for this episode. Got some great people coming up. So please do subscribe, share the link with people who might be interested. And as always, thank you for listening, and best of luck with your writing and your reading.